Paceline is a production of the Cycling Independent with generous support from our subscribers and with additional underwriting from Shimano North America. From the Cycling Independent, this is The Paceline, the podcast on two wheels. I'm Patrick Brady, and with me is my co-host, John Lewis. Each week, we take a look at how cycling fits in our lives. I'm guessing you were, well, maybe not glued to the television, but adhesived to it.
I was watching the Paris-Roubaix events this weekend. It has been true lately that the women's races are more interesting than the men's, mm-hmm. and that also happened at Roubaix. The men's race, the guy everyone thought would win, won. He won it by just riding away from everyone else.
In the world champion's jersey.
In the world champion's jersey, yeah.
And going so fast, it didn't look like he was on cobbles. Can we say that? We can say that, right?
Yeah, I think it was the fastest ever.
Oh, I hadn't seen that. Ugh.
Yeah, I believe it was the fastest ever. So, I don't want to. I don't want to say too much, but
where there's smoke. Oh, moving right along.
Right. Over in the women's side, the person wearing the world champion jersey also won, but she won in a sprint that was exciting and cool and kind of could have gone any which way. She actually, inside the velodrome, we're talking about Lotta Capecchi here, she was boxed in late and kind of had to go over the top and still got the win. So she is a beast. That was an awesome race. And then we just had Brabantspil Minor Classic yesterday. And those were pretty good. Benoit Cosnefroy won the men's from a small group. And then Elisa Longo-Borghini continues her scintillating form.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing about good form. You come into form and suddenly it's like, yeah, I'm going to do this too.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I really thought, I mean, it's... On the women's side, SD Works team is just so, they've just got so much talent. And I thought that with Annemiek van Vleuten exiting the scene, we would see Demi Vollering, who was, I believe she was number one in the world tour last year. I thought she would just sweep everything. And we are, you know, we haven't been in her terrain yet. So she did the three... She swept the Ardennes Classics last season, and so we're going to find out if she is that going to be that rider this year. But I will say they're like Elisa Longo-Borghini is going really well. There are a bunch of women, I think, who could certainly challenge and win those races. It's a pretty fun time to watch women's racing. And I'll say what I've said before, probably some people will disagree with me. I think typically the women's races are shorter. Mm-hmm. And I used to think, well, that sucks. That's, you know.
Less racing.
That's less racing. And they should just race. I mean, why wouldn't they race the same distances? However, I think what happens is the men's races are so long and hard that they tend to be really attritional. And so the winner is often known pretty far from the finish. The women's races are being shorter. I feel like more strong riders make it to the last 5Ks. And it makes for some pretty good fun.
Yeah.
So that's just an observation, but yeah, here we are, classic season. I mean, the thing, I don't know if we talked about it the last week, but the Tour of the Basque Country, Itzulia. I'm probably conflating two races, but the big story in the men on the men's side last week was that at this sort of tune-up race in Spain, Primoz Roglic, Remco Evenepoel, and Jonas Vingegaard all crashed very badly. So now it's looking like Evenepoel will struggle to get to the Tour de France. Vingegaard will very likely not be there.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, he punctured a lung. He did collarbone, ribs, and lung. Evenepoel did his collarbone pretty significantly, but they got him for surgery the next day. Like, I just... Neither of those two are going to get a run-up to the Tour that would suggest they'll win. Mm-hmm. I don't think Vingegaard will even make the start line. And that leaves Roglic, who crashed twice in that race, but was able to walk away and get in the team car. And I think he'll be okay. But yeah. I would say, you know, if you were a betting person, you would say Tadej Pogacar wins the Tour de France going away. Because...
yeah.
65% of his rivals... crushed themselves in a tune-up race.
Yeah, wow. I mean, the guys are getting just ever more specialized. You're seeing fewer Grand Tour riders really lining up, you know, with intent to place, let alone win, in the Spring Classics. It recalls when everyone got really upset at Bernard Hinault, who, after winning Paris-Roubaix, said, "Nope, never doing it again. That race is screwed up. Nope, not going to happen."
Well, I think you are going to see Tadej Pogacar race and win some of the Ardennes races.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think that is going to happen. Yeah, Pogacar's the exception to the rule. Evenepoel can be in there, but I don't think he wants to be. But yeah, I would say Pogacar is the number one all-around rider in the world. He may not be... Vingegaard could make the argument that he's the better Grand Tour rider, but we'll see what happens.
Right. Right.
Or not, as the case may be. But this has been your 5 minutes of Pro Tour, World Tour update.
Yes. Yes. Very cool. All righty. Well, what do you say we jump into your pool?
All right. I was talking with my friend Meghna the other day about our coming shift from running to bikes. So she and I are doing this thing that purports to be the toughest trail race in the Northeast. This is a running race, and quite why I let her sign me up for this, I don't have a good or clear explanation. But here we are. The race is May 4th, and then we'll shift focus back to bikes, which will be fantastic. So I asked her what questions she had about bikes. And she said, sort of tongue-in-cheek, "Okay, how do you get better at bikes?" And it's a joke, but then I thought, you know what, actually, maybe that basic question, how do you get better at bikes, maybe I do have some ideas about that. Like, maybe that is a good actual question to address.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it a shot. So better at bikes can mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. So I'm going to attempt to address as many of them as possible. First, and I think most obviously, there's riding faster. I'll be honest and tell you, this isn't really my specialty. but if your primary goal is actually getting faster, then there are some obvious things you can do. As I say what they are, you'll see why this isn't my specialty, but I'll do my best for you. To get faster, you want to optimize your training. Mm-hmm. I think you have to train intentionally and not just accidentally, but you also have to pay attention to how you're training. That will probably not mean riding hard all the time for most people. It will mean structuring your rides pretty strictly, where you're spending the bulk of your on-bike time riding pretty slowly. Here you're building your base. Then on top of that, you're going to add some interval training. I'm not going to explain what that is. Look it up if you're interested. You'll probably want to limit your big effort days, the days you go really hard, to two a week. Maybe one if you're north of 50 or 60. There's some science here, and taking advantage of it requires measurement and tracking. You'll want a heart rate monitor to get that right. You'll maybe want an app like Strava or something else to tell you whether you're hitting the right training zones at the right time. I have almost zero patience for that kind of structure, which is why I'm not the best person to ask, or for that matter, why I'm not very fast myself. But I think that's the basics of it. Like, mm-hmm. if just getting faster is what you want, you got to pay attention to your training, you need to measure it, and you need to be disciplined. That's getting faster. Next, there's increasing technical skills, or improving technical skills. I have a little more experience and insight here, and I'm going to make two basic recommendations. The first one is slow down. Speed and momentum can help you through an awful lot of technical challenges. I call this the bash and pop method after Tommy Stinson's Post Replacements band. I think the name is self-explanatory. The basic idea is, given enough speed, most obstacles are conquerable, but it's awfully difficult for a beginner or intermediate rider to actually improve their technique while bashing and popping. So slow down. The more slowly you can execute a skill, the more mastery you have of it, okay? I'd also recommend some time on the bike, literally trying to ride as slowly as you can. Practicing full stops, like you might stall before taking on an obstacle on a mountain bike. You know, you might ride up and have a look at it and stall and then roll into the obstacle. Getting comfortable at moving that slowly, even figuring out if you can just balance, stall in place. If you can do it standing, can you do it sitting? This is a chill, low consequence way to get stronger and more intuitive feeling for the bike.
Mm-hmm.
If you're riding clipped in, this is a third recommendation. I said two, but this is the third. If you're riding clipped in, I'd also highly, highly recommend switching to flats. The added time you have in technical situations for not having to clip out will lift your confidence. It'll give you that part of a second you need not to hurt yourself. And I can report that it does not give you less control of the bike. I promise. So that's faster and more technical. Let's briefly just talk about having more fun, which could also be one of the connotations of better at bikes.
Mm.
If your riding feels stale or rote and you want to change that, here are some quick recommendations. Carry binoculars with you and stop a lot to look at birds. That's one. Carry a jet boil or a camping stove with you so you can ride out to a sweet spot, maybe with a view or a nice cool glade, and make yourself a cup of coffee or tea if that's what you're into. Another one I really have grown to enjoy more and more is going to an obstacle that I find challenging and just spending the afternoon with it. I'm mm-hmm. not actually going anywhere. I'm just working on this one thing.
Hmm.
Ride someplace different. I mean, a lot of us head out the door. We know where we're going. We know what we're doing. We know what we're going to see. Just go someplace different. Ride with someone different.
Mm-hmm.
Leave Jerry and Gladys at home. Ditch them. Go out with somebody else. Familiarity breeds contempt. And that is a saying that humans have been using since at least the 5th century, according to the Oxford English Dictionary. So for the purposes of this discussion, that basically means change something about your riding if it's not getting you what you want.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Don't keep doing the same thing thinking everything's going to get better.
Right. Right.
So I know that you have a thousand opinions and feelings and thoughts about this, but what few things might you add?
Well, you know, here's the big thing. The people who are disciplined, you know, if you're somebody who opens a cookbook, looks at a recipe, you know, buys exactly those things, dices up the chicken in exactly that way and follows the recipe perfectly and then gets good results, just go buy a book. Just go buy a book. You know, Villa Press has such a plethora of really good training information. The problem that someone will have is which book to pick. And I would recommend Joe Friel's training for cyclists. It's the book that I used when I first got serious, and I'm not good at following the recipe. For everyone else who isn't good at following recipes and shoots from maybe not even the hip, but, you know, the back pocket or something. The big thing there is understanding that if you go out and tend to go hard, then 1 week a month, just back it all off. If what you like about cycling is going out and thrashing and getting home tired and sweaty, I'm not going to tell you to stop doing that. What I'm going to say is just give yourself 1 week a month where you back off the intensity, at least some, back off the miles some, and give yourself a chance to do some recovery. I have a lot of what is it? Empathy, compassion for the people who don't want to be reined in by a training plan, who don't want to roll out thinking, okay, five intervals. I mean, the people who really want to do the five intervals, they're going to download the workout and they're going to upload it to their Garmin or their Wahoo or whatever. And they're going to get little beeps that tell them exactly what to do. And, you know, for the rider for whom that works, they're going to have great results. I'm at a point in my life where I don't want to feel a lot of discipline on my bike. You know?
Yep. Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm back to sort of where I was very early in my cycling life, where if I got on the bike and I felt tired, I mean, I'm better at knowing how I am before I get on the bike. But if I get on the bike and I notice, oh, your legs are really tired, I make sure to just go for a nice, easy ride. I don't struggle with that understanding anymore. So I think the big thing for so many riders is, you know, find opportunities to be on your bike more, just so you have more experience and in the saddle time, and riding in weird circumstances, you know, ride to the store when that's not normally the thing you do. All the experience that you can get as a cyclist, it pays off. It adds up and it pays off. And the other thing is find ways to give yourself some recovery, so that you do actually get stronger. The facts of my life are, the big things in my life are pretty well controlled. My riding life is much less controlled than I would like because the big things in my life are fairly well controlled, you know, making sure that my boys are getting to school and their homework is done. You know, that's kind of more important than those three intervals I thought I was going to do.
I can't be fast and have my taxes in.
Yeah, case in point.
The other thing I would say here, and Magna was, you know, sort of joking, although we do work on bike skills together, she and I, but I would also question the question, why you got to get better at bikes? You don't know how to get better at bikes. What's wrong with bikes just the way they are? You go out, you ride them. I mean, if you're listening, if you don't know how to ride a bike and you're listening to this, good news. It's awesome. if you do know how to ride bikes already, you're doing great. I bet it's awesome.
Well, you know, here's the thing. getting better at something, it means that you're making progress. Okay. I know that sounds kind of reductively stupid, but when we advance at something, that means that we've usually found that challenge skills balance, which indicates flow. And so flow is an inherent part of getting better at something. When someone asks to get better at something, they want to have more fun. And the more fun part is, oh, in learning that, I experienced flow. So I would argue what somebody's asking for is more flow, but they understand it terminologically as I need to get better at something.
Yeah. Or I mean, sometimes I interpret as comfortable, right?
Sure.
Sometimes getting faster is a function of feeling more comfortable on a descent, for example, or more comfortable with a certain kind of obstacle or in a certain kind of terrain.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's
mastery.
All great.
You know, mastery is very rarely not fun.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Well, you saw me kind of scratching around earlier. I was back home in Memphis for the eclipse with my boys. So grandma and my boys and I went to a park near my mom's house and, you know, hung out in lawn chairs and saw a tiny little sliver of sun. It was good fun. But it allowed me to do some mountain biking on the trails that I first learned to mountain bike on. And I had told myself I was going to bring some other tires with me and set those up, you know, tubeless rather than this. I'm actually riding a mountain bike in Memphis that has inner tubes in it. And they're not very knobby tires. And so on that soil, I find myself sliding a lot. And so I was able to get to a point of comfort this past weekend where two-wheel drifts in turns were pretty common. I wasn't able to pedal through them. That's really, that's the next level stuff. But I was getting two-wheel drifts in lots of turns, and I didn't fall on my hip even once. That's the sort of thing where, you know, practicing stuff, trying things, getting better. Being good at bikes is fun.
Yeah.
So if you ride right after a huge rainstorm, the poison ivy oil can get on other plants that can then get on you so that you don't actually have to ride through the poison ivy to get the poison ivy. So right now, hydrocortisone cream is my ever-present companion.
Sure. Sure. But sometimes to get better, you have to put hydrocortisone cream on. That's just how it is.
Okay. I guess I can accept that. It was certainly and two-wheel drifts on a bike, man. It's a good time. I don't think that gets the credit it deserves. I guess because the learning curve is really steep. But as a skill to have in my back pocket, I love it.
I don't know if I deploy it as a skill. It sometimes gets deployed. you know, it's not, yeah. I would not say I have any mastery of it, but sometimes both wheels let go and I think, oh, I'm going to fall down. And then I think, hey, I didn't fall down. That's not mastery.
Right. Right. Whereas I was pushing my pace, trying to go fast enough that I anticipated I would probably break loose and then did. I just haven't gotten to the point again. Like I used to be able to do in some cyclocross races where I could pedal through a two-wheel drift. That playing in a rock band before an audience of maybe 1,000 people, that's about as cool as I ever was.
Again, I will take your word for it. I thought you were going to say a crowd of 6 people, and I was ready to nod my head.
Those nights, and I did have those, I didn't feel cool at all.
Oh, yeah, we totally slayed those 6 people.
There was a night where this one band of mine, Anzio Complex, was playing the world-famous Antenna Club, and almost no one came. It was a Sunday night. And we'd... we'd read the story, I don't know, Towser Press or something, where one of the police's first shows in the U.S., three people showed up. And they walked out in the audience and they introduced themselves to everyone and they made everyone introduce themselves to each other. So all six people present were on a first name basis with everyone else. And so that's what we did that night when it was five or six people. We may have had more people on stage than in the audience is what it was.
Yeah.
So outside of that, I have very rarely ever been cool. We're going to take a break and be back in just a minute. The Pace Line is sponsored by Shimano North America and their new 12-speed GRX mechanical group sets. Gravel cycling shouldn't be overly complicated. The heart and soul of cycling's drop bar dirt road discipline is simplicity, inclusivity, and adventure. No ride is out of bounds. All are welcome to join. Gear should be functional, reliable, and not break the bank. These are the core ideas behind Shimano's 12-speed GRX mechanical groups. Find out more at gravel.shimano.com.
Okay, we're back with the Pace Line, the podcast on two wheels. What's your pull this week?
Well, I did my first organized event of the season this past weekend while I was in Memphis for the Eclipse with my boys, as I mentioned. The event was put on by my friend Clark Butcher at Victory Bicycle Studio in Midtown Memphis. And that's just, it's such a cool operation. I mean, I tend to like most all the retailers in Memphis, but Clark's been a friend for, I don't know, 15 years at this point. He's a good dude. The ride is called the Rust Buster. And you will see why in a photo on our site if you drop by, because a portrait of me was taken on the busted rust sort of old rat trap of a vehicle parked there. They offered two different rides. There was a road ride of roughly 50 miles, as well as a gravel ride of roughly 50 miles. In fact, it was 52. They said 45. So those last 7 miles were like, it's going to end soon, I think.
I love that. I hate that. I said I loved it. I hate that.
It is amusing. After all these years as a cyclist to get to like mile 49, it's like, well, it was supposed to end 4 miles ago. This is still kind of dramatic. Okay. I've still not, you know, I was relaxed about it, but it was like, okay, but when is it going to end? Exactly. I was still asking the question.
Exactly.
So prior to flying out, I texted Clark and asked him what tire I should mount. And he said something fairly slick, but 40 to 42 millimeters wide. So I mounted up the American Classic Kimber Lights, which I reviewed last year. I should mention that, yes, I chose to do the gravel ride. Victory did a really nice job of promoting the event and even garnering support from brands. Among others, SRAM and Pinarello had a presence there. And I met riders from Arkansas, Georgia, North Carolina, and Mississippi. I'm willing to bet there was at least one person there from Alabama, but I didn't bump into them. The ride was held on land that is the far western edge of Tennessee, north of Memphis, near Meeman Shelby Forest State Park. Now, that edge, that western edge of Tennessee that, you know, bumps up against the Mississippi River or is bordered by the Mississippi River, there's this whole section of land that is just west of the last highway coming out of Memphis. And while I knew the Shelby Forest from years ago when I still lived and trained in Memphis, I didn't really know any of the area north of that. Riding from home, you would ride to Shelby Forest, but you didn't ride past it. You went there for the hills. So while Western Tennessee is mostly flat to slightly rolling, the river bluff land in and around Meeman Shelby Forest State Park, I know that's a mouthful, is very hilly. None of the hills particularly long or big, but they often turn quite steep, so it's possible to encounter a 100-meter long hill that tilts at 13%.
Ow.
You do enough of those, and actually it starts to add up. Just ask people in Wisconsin. they're like, yeah, we don't have any big hills, but we have hills all the time.
Yeah.
So that's what I hear about that. What was funny to me was that the opening 20-ish miles had next to no gravel to speak of. And I wondered why I wasn't just running the 30 millimeter Panaracers I'd been riding days before. Oh, ye of little faith. After commenting about this to a rider next to me, roughly a half mile later, the road went to gravel and mostly stayed gravel for the next 25 miles. This area, you know, sometimes inside of the Mississippi River is an area I'd never visited at all before. It's mostly flat farmland. While this isn't Mississippi, you know, you're not far from Mississippi. Right. This is definitely William Faulkner's South, a place of tilled fields, spring floods, and oppressive summers. The gravel road usually had some loose pea gravel on it, but there was almost always two good lines through it. And even the soft stuff was really pretty rideable, just a little slower. I met a number of really nice riders who, like me, worried that the end of the ride would take us back over all the hills in Shelby Forest, a fate we were saved from. Though, the, like I said, the 45-mile route ended up being more like 52 miles. And at the finish, there were lamb tacos, chicken wings, a local IPA that had been labeled for Victory Bicycle Studio, as well as kind of small servings of key lime pie. And as an aficionado of key lime pie, they did a pretty good job. They did a good enough job that I wanted more than the serving that I had, but I was going to be a good boy.
I mean,
and not
if
ask.
You're eating your first key lime pie in April, you're on a good pace. Because I mean, to me, you wouldn't eat key lime pie until late May. I mean, obviously, you would eat it at every opportunity you had to eat it.
Yeah, but all the words that you just said didn't make any sense until you said, obviously, you would eat it at any opportunity.
Sure, sure, sure. If key lime pie presents itself, you put it in your literally in your pie hole. I just don't expect to encounter it much before May. So you're doing great.
Yeah. I got to give out a couple shout outs to listeners and readers. Bob Black Oaken he recognized me. He's a reader and a listener, but I mean, he's actually somebody in the bike community. He's a famous photographer in Little Rock. And when Allied Cycle Works was first getting going, he did all of their photography. He's also a spin class instructor and coaches juniors. And I'm told he has even done some event promotion. So super nice guy. Dave Mann was another fella I met there. Really fun guy. And one of Clark's former employees who used to manage the store, but now works for a tech startup in Little Rock, Nick Lewis. He was there. And so it was fun seeing Nick after not having seen him for a few years. And they're just typical of so many really nice people that I met. The North American sales manager for Pinarello. He and I rode for, I don't know, 5-8 miles together. Super dude. We had a really fun time chatting. And, you know, I think one of the things about when I found out about the event that I really made me want to do it was partly just Clark. I like Clark because he's actively building community in Memphis. Friends of mine who aren't even cyclists have dusted off their beach cruisers and signed up for his training groups. And now I have people I know asking me what sort of road bike to buy. to use a popular Southernism, Clark is doing the Lord's work. And that will definitely make him laugh because he's Jewish. he was selling t-shirts that said, this Jew eats pork. This Jew eats pigs. Yes. So he's got a good sense of humor about that sort of thing. The other observation I have is that the 50-ish mile length of the Rust Buster is a really terrific distance for a gravel event, I gotta say. I got out, I saw stuff, I had a great ride, met cool people, you know, like I said, including some readers slash listeners, pulverized my legs sufficiently, and I got home at a reasonable hour, which means that doing an organized event while on vacation with my family didn't become a day-long ordeal of me being gone with the only car.
Yeah.
Burning a whole day is something family members they tend not to be too wild about. So being able to leave before anyone missed me, before anyone was awake, and be home just after 2 o'clock gave me time to do something with my family after I'd had my fun. That way they didn't feel cheated. Sure. I think too often rides get caught up with being the most extreme event out there. I mean, Unbound, you know, it was 200 miles long. And then they had to up the ante from 200 miles because other events were starting to encroach on that thing of theirs, you know? So they added Unbound XL at almost twice the distance.
Yeah.
Nothing against them. You know, I love that that event exists and I'm glad I've done it. But I think the growth market for cycling is in the sub 80 mile event, not the 80 plus mile event. Mm-hmm. And honestly, if the only distance for the Rust Buster had been 110 miles or something, I probably would not have done it.
Yeah.
You know, current fitness aside, just knowing that, I'll get home at 6 o'clock and my mother will wonder what happened.
I think event organizers generally should stop worrying about distances so much and say, like, what is good about my event? And I'm going to deliver that to you efficiently.
Yep.
And then I'm done. I don't have to pad it. You don't have to do two laps. I just think, you know, maybe it's getting people into some terrain that they haven't seen before. Great. Take them out there. Let them get a good, healthy dose of it, and then give them some key lime pie. You're done. You did it.
Yeah.
So, and I think most events happen because there is something unique that someone says, I want to share this with people. If you can just focus on that instead of, well, we've got to do a 50, we have to do 100, we have to do, you know, like.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, with RAGBRAI, the Register's annual great bike ride across Iowa, one of the things an awful lot of riders like to do is at the start, they will go and touch their rear tire in the river. That's what the, is it the, I can't remember. Is it the Columbia River on that side? And then they ride across Iowa and then they touch their front tire in the Mississippi River. I'm not somebody who does that. But for people who do that, this ride had that at the one sag stop, kind of the turnaround at the northern end of the course. They'd found this, you know, barren spot of dirt that also happened to have a boat launch on it. Mm. So some people went down and like touched their bike tires in the water. You know, to suddenly, one of the things for Memphians is that very often their view of Memphis is from up on the bluffs. Memphis sits on bluffs 100, 200 feet above the river below. And so they don't often get a view of the water, you know, at 5 or 6 feet above it.
Yeah.
And so that was something that I had people actually comment to me. I didn't think, I really didn't give it any thought until a couple people said, God, it's fun being this close to the river. So, you know, that was that was a cool thing. Giving, you know, giving the locals something different, it can be kind of hard to do.
Sure.
So, this was a really neat event. And one of the things I love about gravel is it actually gets people to travel to events because you really will see something different than what you have at home. yeah. you know, going and doing a century in a different place. It, you know, some of the views might be different, but it's not necessarily a really different cycling experience. Right. Riding on this gravel was a little different than riding on gravel almost any place else I've been. It was a really, you know, just a really fun event. And also, it wasn't overly big. Clark said he wanted to keep it to a manageable size so that he'd have a chance to personally say hi to most everybody. Being around Clark, it can wear me out. Dude is so extroverted, so loves people. He is his own one-man personal up with people parade. I love that about that guy. He is in the perfect career for himself, being a bicycle retailer and just selling the passion of cycling. But, you know, thank God we have people who will hold an event and then want it to be small enough so that they can personally say hi to everyone who showed up. That would kill me.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's part of the beauty of what Clark is about, and the way he is actively building community and making cycling a better thing in Memphis, which generally I think is kind of hard to do.
Sure. I mean, as a fellow Southerner, I would say, you know, keep going, man.
Doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I can heartily recommend that anyone who's looking for, you know, an event to do someplace different that isn't too long. Yeah, next year, go check out the Rust Buster.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm unlikely to manage to line my next visit up with it, which bums me out.
Never know. You never know. Never say never.
There we go. Yeah. There's unlikely to be another eclipse for this, though. Maybe all I have to do is wait 45 years. Okay.
Your mom does still live there.
Yes. All righty. Let's move on to Paceline picks. What's your pick this week?
So today I'm going to pick, I'm going to get pretty specific. But you know how it is when you eat something that hits you just right, and then you kind of only want to eat that thing for a while?
You mean like pulled pork barbecue sandwiches?
Exactly. Okay. Exactly like that. Exactly like that.
Well, yes.
Yes. As you know, I've been training for a trail running event, and I've now worked up to distances in my training, distances and difficulties, I would say, that go better with calories added. Like you can run 6 flat miles without eating, you know, whatever. But if you're going to run 8 to 12 really technical miles full of vertical, it helps a lot to add some fuel into that mix.
Okay.
A week or two back, I ate I don't know if aid is the right word. I consumed a Cola Me Happy goo gel that breathed life back into my withering soul. I was some miles into running a trail that was hardly runnable. It was so up and down. So anyway, I'm picking the Cola Me Happy goo gel. The name is bracingly stupid, but I don't even care. And it's weird to pick a specific flavor, right? You know, these are goo gels. Everyone knows what they are. But one of the aspects of my riding, hiking, running, everything life that has been pretty persistent for the last 3 decades has been the full gas Coke. The ice cold red can that resurrects. Lost souls. Okay, I'm not a fan of the Coca-Cola Corporation any more than I'm a fan of Coke dealers, but they inarguably make a compelling product. So,
I'm not going to try to unpack that. Please continue.
No, leave it right where it is. Cola flavored gels remind me of the kind of salvation yet to come, the Coke that I'm going to drink when I finish whatever it is, whatever asinine thing I've started. For $1.50, that is a tremendous value to my ongoing efforts not to die in the woods.
Yeah, I'm a big, big fan of that gel as well. When I order whole boxes from them from time to time, that is quite regularly in my assortment. The first time I ever had one, I was worried about, like, well, what's this going to go down like without caffeine, carbonation? And yes, you know, one part of the attraction of it is it does have caffeine, just like a Coke. But lacking that carbonation, I was a little worried. And then I had one and I stopped worrying.
Yeah. It manages to bet, like, it's not too much. There are some new gels on the market that are actually quite a lot of volume.
Yeah.
A gel is a weird thing to eat. You know, it's like you don't put your mouth on the end of the toothpaste and give it a squeeze. I just think, like, the dosage... what I want is something that's not too crazy sweet that's going to upset my mouth and stomach.
Yeah.
And is not so much volume that I'm like, queasy by having to consume a lot of gel. But I think the goo gel really nails it.
Yeah. What I'm learning about myself is that I can do two or three gels in a day.
Hmm.
But if I'm having a day where I need more calories than I can cover in two or three gels, then I need to start defaulting to more substantive stuff.
Absolutely.
You know, I can work gels in with other forms of realer food, if we can use that term. Not all flavors are created equal, I guess, is the lesson here.
True.
Yeah. And that's one that I can do in hot or cold weather, which is also an unusual quality.
Yeah. I've picked the cola flavor here. I know there's a lot of people who are like, no. I would only do a fruit flavor or whatever. I get it. I mean, there's like chocolate peanut butter. The idea of chocolate peanut butter when I'm like sweating at max output is like, nope, no. Right. So, but you know, but tomato, right?
I can totally do that one on a cold day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, 45 and blustery. Yes.
Yeah.
Chocolate and peanut butter. I want them both right now.
Yeah. Yes. On a cold day, I get, yes. I'm just saying I find the cola one, I can do it in any weather. And it also does remind me that there is a reward, a sugary, terrible for you reward at the end of whatever I'm doing.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I'm with you. All right. So I've been doing a tour of different tubeless sealants recently for a couple of reasons.
You know how to party.
I really do. part of it was availability, you know, walking into bike shops that like, oh, they only have stands or they only have, you know, orange seal.
Right.
As much as I love so many stands products, I don't buy their sealant anymore because I don't like the standables. One of the reasons that had me trying stuff is that I found that, at least from my taste, many of them dry out too quickly. So I recently ordered a big jug of Finish Lines. Technically, they call it a bottle. The jug is the 1 gallon size. I'll get to sizes later. A big bottle of Finish Lines Fiberlink sealant. And it's possible that I may have finally arrived at a sealant that I will stick with, at least as a general rule of behavior. Mm-hmm. Fiberlink uses a low viscosity latex mixture. That means it's pretty sticky and thick, but it includes Kevlar fibers to help seal up any cut or puncture. The original formulation of Fiberlink wasn't as viscous and didn't work quite as Finish Line advertised it. And so they pulled it briefly and reformulated it and reintroduced it not too long after it was originally introduced. And I wonder how many people are actually aware of that, because if you tried it right when it first came out and didn't like it, this would be a time to try it again.
All right.
Yeah. I don't puncture that often, but recently I've experienced two small punctures on tires that had Fiberlink sealant in the tires. And in both cases, I am pleased and actually a little amazed to say that I didn't find out about the punctures until after I got home. Putting away my bike, I looked down to see a buff colored mark on the tire and then realized it was dried sealant. And I was like,
the wind.
I threw a V standing in my garage door. I was like, yes, yeah. This is the promise of sealant. Look at that. I didn't even know. So as I mentioned, it comes in multiple sizes, three sizes. In fact, there's the 8-ounce bottle, which a lot of people will buy just to set up, you know, one set of wheels. There's the 32-ounce bottle, which you can get an awful lot out of, and then the 1-gallon jug. And the way it's priced, buying larger amounts, it really is worth it. And if you're worried about whether or not you should drop more than $100 on the 1-gallon jug, I can say that it keeps in the bottle quite well. I misplaced a half-used bottle for almost 6 months, and it was still perfectly good, not even remotely dried out when I ran across it very recently. There may be a better sealant out there, but what I can say is that Fiberlink is the least frustrating sealant I've used so far.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm happy with this. And I will actually be seeing the person who handles PR for them at Sea Otter. And I have every intention of saying something about that to them.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sea Otter coming.
Yeah. Which means that, next week, we will probably just miss posting the Pace Line next week because I will be down in Monterey and without some of the things that I need. So,
everyone will just have to muddle through.
They've survived just fine without us. They'll probably survive, but we do hope you return when we redo. Alrighty, that's a wrap on another episode of The Paceline. We've mentioned a couple sites here, and we will have links in our show notes. So we hope you stop by the Cycling Independent, and hey, feel free to leave a comment in our comments.
Our theme music is by Crash Cadet. Find them on Bandcamp or wherever you listen to music. We want to thank Shimano, as always, for helping us pay the bills. If you want to help us pay the bills, you can subscribe to TCI or just drop a couple dollars in the tip jar in our online store. It all goes to the good stuff we try to do.
Yeah. Mostly our contributors. And Mo is back with us recently. And we have another new contributor, Connor Burns.
Connor Burns. Dr. Ray Epstein is now contributing as well. Things are happening.
Yeah. Alrighty. Wherever you are, however your day is going, we do hope you get out for a ride. Until next time, I'm Patrick Brady with John Lewis. Thanks for listening to The Paceline.